And now we turn to our special panel discussion for the rest of this hour on hiring and firing trends in the federal government, and we're going to get into what this might all mean for the rest of the government. Our guests this morning are Michael Caine, the CHCO, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD. Gentlemen, welcome to the studio.
Nice to be here.
Good morning.
Okay, well, you just heard what's going on at the FAA with 4,000 highly qualified engineers and PhDs being furloughed. Just before we get into the meat of this discussion, I wanted to ask you, as human capital officers and personnel people, what effect do you think this type of situation might have on hiring and firing throughout the federal government, you know, the attractiveness of federal employment? Mr. Caine, why don't we start with you?
Well, I think it does have an impact. People look at where industry is. They look at where government is. They look at where jobs will be and how stable they will be. I think one thing this gives the federal government is the opportunity to say, we have long-term programs. We do have ups and downs, just like industry, but we also have very challenging careers. We have similar occupation series, and one of the things that you can do in government is look at a long-term stabilized career path. It might have interruptions. It might be subject, as the administrator said, to political debate, but the work and the challenges remain. So I don't see it having a tremendous impact. I think it does have a temporary impact, and it's something we need to remain very clear as professionals about, that the marketplace drives a lot of what's done, and the government is susceptible to that to some extent.
And Mr. Tamburino, at Civilian Defense, they've had their own issues over the past few years with the changes in personnel system and so forth. So what's your take on current events and the effect they might be having on the attractiveness of federal civilian employment at DOD?
I think federal civilian employment as a general proposition is still extraordinarily attractive. I don't know any industry where you can come and get the kind of challenges and work literally right out of college, sometimes right out of high school, and do the phenomenal things we do. And I think what's enormously attractive about the federal government is you can move from agency to agency, and you can increase your market basket of skills over whatever career period you choose to be with us. And I think what I hear from the young people we hire in, and even the people we take in at the mid-career level, is there is something enormously attractive about serving your country. That's hard to put how do you measure that? But I hear that time and again, and the work is terrific. They get to do things that private sector can't just offer, these kinds of challenges.
Because the federal government has faced these sorts of challenges, and because beyond what's going on Capitol Hill, but there seems to be this sentiment every once in a while that the federal workers aren't doing their job or getting overpaid or whatever, is there a concern in the hiring and firing trends that that might actually have an impact on attracting this pool of people who do want to serve their country? Or is that even a concern?
I'm certainly not seeing that. As a matter of fact, our numbers are steady, and they increase, actually, when time gets tough. I think people focus on what the government is doing, just as Pat said, what's the value, where are we? And we actually see increases in those times. And one of the things I think that is important to remember when you're looking at the volume of recruitment that the government does and the cycles that the government goes through in terms of career paths, we have an enormous impact when you look at student development, student employment programs, and those remain very viable. And they're attracting, as Pat said, high school students, college students. We have to remain vigilant about being in that market. And one of the things to do in that is to keep communicating with them about the value that they bring, what they personally bring to the table, to the country.
Mr. Tamburino?
I would totally agree. I don't think there's an issue with attracting anybody. I don't see any problem with our recruitment. People want to come. And once they get there, here's what I think they universally find. They find a group of people that are totally dedicated to their jobs. I mean, federal employees, I'll speak for DOD because that's the only federal agency I've ever worked for, just come to work every morning. They understand We're a nation at war. They understand the value of the mission. They understand what they have to do to support the warfighter, and they are totally focused on that. And people see that work ethic, and most people say, I want to be part of that. And it's just a tremendous, terrific feeling to go into the Pentagon every day and see that.
And I wanted to follow up on that statement you said, that you've only worked for Department of Defense. Give us a quick background on what you've done to get to the point where you're in charge of civilian personnel.
I think I'm in charge of civilian personnel because of a great opportunity in the Department of Defense called Enterprise Talent Management. Great leaders like the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and others saw fit that executives should get out of where they started. I started in financial management and program management and do other things, because that's our responsibility as federal executives, to lead people. So I am there because I have done program management, I've run large organizations, I've done financial management, and I wanted to do this. I wanted to get an opportunity to be the chief and human capital officer, and I'm having a great time, because at the end of the day, I'm getting to help shape the workforce for the secretary, and I think that's a really exciting thing to do.
And Mr. Kane, we should probably get your 30-second bio also, just to help listeners get an idea.
Well, my background is actually very similar to Pat's. I started in the Defense Department, spent about 16 years over there in the acquisition and financial management community, and then I moved to the Energy Department, and I was in large-scale laboratory management, looking at how to better and more efficiently manage our laboratories. That took me to a place where it was all about the people. And when Secretary Chu came on board, he embraces that. He believes that. It is all about the talent. The government is the talented people that we have working for and with us. And so that's how he moved me. Similar type of approach. Take the executive out of their comfort zone, put them in somewhere where they can make change.
We are speaking with Michael Kane, the CHCO at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about hiring and firing trends in the federal government. I'm Amy Morris with Tom Temin. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Amy Morris along with Tom Temin. We're talking about hiring and firing trends in government. Our guests are Michael Kane, CHCO at Energy, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD.
Our first question today really concerns the OPM hiring reforms that were announced with a lot of fanfare about 18 months ago, and they wanted agencies to reduce hiring time and take quite a few measures to just get the whole thing oiled up and speed it up. So I'd like to get a progress report on how those reforms, or any reforms in hiring, are playing out at this point in your agencies. And Mr. Tamburino, why don't we start with you and DOD?
Okay, I think it's playing out very well with us. The time to hire, if we're going to measure that, for us, all hires is 74 days, which is under the goal established by the Office of Personnel Management. But, you know, we're looking at it differently. That's an interesting idea, that it takes you 80 days to hire somebody. And we want it to be simple, and we want it to be quicker. What we're starting to look at is employment reform. Of when I bring an employee into the government, how do I take care of them over their entire life cycle? I have to onboard them. I have to train them. I have to acculturate them. I have to keep their career path moving down a positive road. And at some point in time, I have to let them go home gracefully if that's what they choose to do. So we've broken it into 10 steps, and we're trying to focus on each of those steps discreetly while keeping the 80 days in mind. But we're starting to look at applicant satisfaction, rather. What did the applicant think of the process? And we're collecting feedback on that. And we're talking to managers and measuring their satisfaction through surveys and say, well, we did it in 80 days, but did you get the person you wanted to get? Did you get the skill set you wanted? So we've taken it way beyond the 80 days. You know, I have my own test case. My daughter, Sarah, graduated from law school a couple of weeks ago, finished the Florida bar on Wednesday.
Congratulations.
So we're excited. And she, like thousands of her cohorts, are looking for work. And she is looking for federal employment. And I get great feedback from her about how the process is to navigate. And she gives me excellent feedback on things that are simple and things that she finds difficult, and I take that seriously. One, I take my own experiment, but by and large, it is simpler, more efficient, and quicker than when I did it 30 years ago, where it was just as tedious as it could have possibly been.
And what about KSAs? Did DOD have them and get rid of them, or what's the approach there?
We're using plain resumes right now. We're taking a resume in, letting you load it into USA Jobs and using USA Staffing. Some of the jobs require a survey of questions to get to your knowledge, skills, and abilities, but the old process of submitting an SF-171, if you can remember that far back in time, and then answering a laborious list of KSAs full of jargon, that's long gone. We're down to very streamlined submission of resumes with a survey if it's appropriate.
And Mr. Kane, a progress report at Energy.
I'll echo what Pat said about the process in general, but I'll also tell you that one of the things we looked at Energy was the time it took us to hire. We were running about 174 days. We hire very highly technical individuals, and that is sometimes a difficult challenge. When we looked at that process, most of it was caught up in the mechanics. So Time to Hire and USA Jobs have streamlined things. They've taken us from 174 days all the way down to 86, and we're moving lower. Now, one of the things that it's also doing for us is identifying those things that Pat just talked about. Where in the process are we still struggling? Where do we still find that the quality is not where we want it to be? For us, it's moving from KSAs into that resume-based assessment process and the interviews that get at the quality. And we're spending a lot of time right now interacting with the people who are being interviewed, those that were selected and those that were not. And how do they see the process? How do they view that? Was it value added? A big equation to that are the managers themselves. And so while we put authority right into the manager's hands, we know HR has a big job in terms of backing those individuals up and getting them more accustomed to the process that doesn't do, as Pat said, with the old SF-171, digest the information for you.
Are there any obstacles that still remain to that? I mean, was there resistance to eliminating the KSAs? Are there still the issues of those laborious, arcane job descriptions and questions that must be answered? I mean, plain writing is a big deal in the federal government today.
There's always obstacles. My view is the biggest barrier, the critical path in hiring reform is being prepared to hire. Managers have to think about vacancies well in advance of the day they actually occur. And to think about that, I'm encouraging to say, don't wait till Johnny or Mary declares they're going to retire. Try and plan for it. And don't make every job unique. We have basic job buckets in the federal government, contracting officers, financial managers, engineers. I think you can describe those in fairly generic, broad terms and write job opportunity announcements that speak to it in general and get out of it all this enormously detailed material, which is what bogs it down. But they have to prepare. And I think that's going to be the biggest educational piece we have, is be prepared to hire in advance of the event occurring. And I think there's a couple of federal agencies that I think are doing really well on that. And we want to mimic that. We want to have the job jar ready to go well in advance.
And Energy, of course, has a lot of highly technical and highly specialized people. So I imagine the managers that employ, that oversee those people, supervise them, have to think in advance also.
That is correct. And Pat's brought up an excellent point. It's not just thinking ahead. It's also thinking about the structure of the office and getting them to look past the immediate milestones they have to achieve and saying, when this individual gets ready to go, do I have the ability to hire at a lower level and with less experience and start to build that bench strength, that depth that we need for these long-term continuing stewardship activities?
We are speaking with Michael Kane, the CHCO of the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at the Defense Department. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about hiring and firing trends in government. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris. It's 9:36. We're talking about hiring and firing and employment trends in the federal government. Our guests this morning are Michael Kane, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at the Defense Department.
And I'd like to add the next question. I asked the next question to Mr. Tamburino, and that is about the idea of poor performers in the federal government. You know, we all saw that article that came out a couple of weeks ago about, oh, you're more likely to die than you are to get fired from the federal government. There are those at the Partnership for Public Service who have said that that is grossly mischaracterized and very unfair. But there is a process in place to move or eliminate those poor performers. Talk to us a bit about that, if you will, Mr. Tamburino.
The process of moving or removing a poor performer, I'd rather think about it in terms of what's the responsibility of supervisors and management. You know, my view is that when somebody's not performing in the way you had expected them, there's a responsibility to go talk to that person and find out why. There are thousands of reasons why people don't do well at work. Many of them are from outside the workplace, of health stress, family stress, a thousand different points of stress. Or they just don't know how to do the job and they need some additional training, or they're not getting good direction every day. So I'm a big fan of, you know, the most simplest thing in the world, I think, in the workplace. Supervisors have to talk to their employees, find out what's happening when performance falls off the center line, say, why is that? And I think most people can recover if they get the right coaching and the right mentoring.
So don't let it get too far.
No, you have to intervene early. I'm also a big fan of documenting these things because bad things do happen occasionally and you want to have a record of what happened. But I think good counseling, good mentoring, early intervention, you can put it on track. And then in those rare cases where you've tried and tried and tried and it's a case of not that I can't, but I won't, then you enter into the progressive discipline cycle, which is well documented in the federal government. And that's really unfortunate when that happens. But I believe if you can recover, we should help people recover. And if they don't want to recover, that's their choice. And we have to take the appropriate action for the benefit of the rest of the people in the workforce.
Mr. King, you are nodding in agreement.
Yes, I am nodding in agreement. I think there's one important thing that Pat talked about there, and that is there is a formal process, and that formal process is followed. One of the things I think we see when you look at all the surveys across government is people don't see that. They can't transparently see that that process is underway out of respect for the individual, their rights, their concerns. What we need to do is make it clear that those processes are there. And as Pat said, encourage managers to think about the process before it gets to the point where they have to engage into that formal cycle. And that is all about what a good leader does. A good leader looks at how people are developing and looks at how they are progressing and gives them that formal feedback. So formal feedback's important.
Yeah, what I'm taking away from what you gentlemen are saying is, and I apologize for this analogy, but they say there's no such thing as a bad dog, only bad owners. And sounds like you're saying that really it's incumbent upon management and managers to make sure things don't get too far, and that maybe we overplay the whole situation, that the rumors of how impossible it is to get somebody out of federal government.
Well, as Mike said, it's not impossible. There are documented procedures and protocols for doing it that are time-honored and time-tested, and I think go to great lengths to preserve the equities of both the federal government and the equities of the individual. I think that is the essence of supervision, and that's something that, at least in DOD, we're encouraging people to get back to this in our leadership development programs. How does one learn how to supervise? What are your responsibilities on a day-in and day-out basis? You know, a lot of times supervisors think their responsibility is to create product, I'd say, well, that's true for part of the day. The rest of your day is coaching, mentoring. Make sure that people who are producing the product have the tools they need to do it. And that's where we're focused, is make sure you're taking care of your people. And when bad things happen and difficult things happen, people like me have to get behind that supervisor and say, I'm here for you. When you have to do these difficult things, I'm going to stand right next to you and give you all the support you need to be successful in that process at well. Because I think that's a concern that supervisors, you know, they're unclear whether they're going to get support up the chain. And in DOD, they do get support. And I hope they understand and appreciate that.
It does seem like a lot of the onus lies on the supervisor.
It does. Supervisors have a responsibility. Just as Pat said, you look at their job descriptions, that's part of what they're graded on. And really, that is why you're in the job you're in. You're in it to guide, to develop, to direct people. And part of that guiding and directing is you're doing what we need you to do, you're not, and here's how I'm going to help you get to the level we need you to be.
It is 9:42, and we are speaking with Michael Kane, the CHCO at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about hiring and firing trends in the federal government. I'm Amy Morris, along with Tom Temin. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Amy Morris, along with Tom Temin. We're talking about hiring and firing trends in government. Our guests are Michael Kane, the CHCO at Energy, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD.
And next, we wanted to go into a topic that I know is near and dear to Amy Morris's heart, and that is the so-called millennial generation that everyone seems to be expending so much energy on trying to figure out and accommodate and see what it is they need and should have for hiring and nurturing. I'd like to get your perspectives on the reality of younger workers that are coming into the federal government. I mean, I'll just offer this. I've seen a huge amount of interest on the millennials that I have known for what the Defense Department does. It may be something counterintuitive in that, but that's the case. Why don't you tell us what it is you're finding? Why don't we start with DOD?
You know what I find? I find these folks are tremendously enthusiastic. And like all enthusiastic people, they have to be guided and mentored. We get them. They're excited. They're excited, one, to have a job. That's a big deal now. And they're excited to have a job with us. And what I find is they have enormous amounts of creative energy. They have enormous amounts of energy, period. And what they want is they want to link up with somebody. When we link them up with a mentor that has been inside the federal government for a while that can say, I'll let you work on really meaningful projects. I'll let you be the spokesperson in front of the boss. I'll let you write the report, but I'll guide you and you'll feel successful at the end of the day. These are tremendous people. They're full of energy. Like all people full of energy, they require a little bit of guidance because they are new to the workplace.
And just a follow-up question, do you think we overemphasize the technology and the Twitter and those aspects to the detriment of saying that young people in many ways have always been the same?
You know, I look at the social media and I find it kind of fascinating. I have two millennials. One is very much into the social media and all the technology, and one could care very much less about that technology at all. But what I do find is they're energetic. And the other thing I find a lot now is if they were teenagers on September, on 9/11, if they were in high school, they remember that day as a very profound day in history. And I find repeatedly in the interviews a resurgence of, that was phenomenal, and I owe something to my country now because I lived through that day as a high school student, as a young person in America. And I hear that a lot on interviews as a really motivating factor for wanting to become a federal employee.
Is that exclusive to inside the Beltway, or do you see that nationally?
I see that nationally. I see it profoundly inside the Beltway, because of the demographics of all the federal and military workers and the children that were at your local elementary or secondary school. But that was an international event. And it comes up more than I thought it ever was going to come up in an interview. So they do feel some debt to serve because they live in this nation of ours, which is really fantastic at the end of the day.
And Mr. Kane, what's your experience at Energy?
Ours is similar to Pat's. I do see that this group of students coming in, looking for jobs, bring a tremendous amount of passion. They also bring a very questioning approach to how they're mentored and how they're coached. They're looking for really what I call the blackboard type of approach. They're used to seeing that in school where they go in, they can get their assignments, they know right where everybody is, they can find somebody and communicate with them. They're looking for that same approach from their supervisors. They're used to talking to each other at 8 o'clock at night. They want to see that. And what I'm seeing is our supervisors are actually starting to respond that way. We're spread all across the United States. And one of the things that we've done, particularly for the engineering and the highly technical communities, is put them into cohorts, and they use electronic mentoring. And it really is becoming a training base in and among itself. As they share experiences, a development of what I call case study types approaches to solving problems. And it tends to break down geographic issues that we in the Energy Department have experienced over a long period of time.
So that sounds like one way to mitigate what might be intergenerational, I don't know, conflict or separation, I guess. Is, I don't want to overstate it. But to break that all down and get them all together is the very act of assigning them to one another in a mentoring situation.
Yes. And one of the things I think it does is it builds a stronger continuity. I talked a little bit about bench strength. It begins to identify that bench strength not locally, as Amy talked about, inside the Beltway, but it starts to extend it in a virtual sense nationwide and, for us, worldwide.
A quick question before we go to the next break, and that is about the difference then between that group and others. One of the things that I talked about with Tom earlier is, you know, what other generation didn't want mentorship or feedback or the ability to talk with their teachers and stuff like that? How is that different than anybody else?
I don't think it is. Right. I think that's what employees want every day. They want to talk to their bosses and say, you know, what's our objective today? What's my role in achieving those objectives? They want to see the leadership. I'm really fortunate. I work for Dr. Stanley, the Undersecretary for Personnel and Readiness. It is not unusual for Dr. Stanley to show up in my office, which is two floors away in five corridors, to come and talk to me about what's going on and meeting the people. And that's what people want. They want to know what they're doing matters. They want to know that their bosses and their leaders and supervisors are interested in what their work product is. And when you give them that feedback, that pat on the back, that email that says, hey, that was a great PowerPoint or white paper or whatever, you make miles. You make so much return on investment from that. I think that's what every worker wants.
We're speaking with Pat Tamburino, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel at the Defense Department, and Michael Kane, the CHCO at the Energy Department. This is a Federal News Radio discussion about hiring and firing trends in government. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin, along with Amy Morris. We are talking about hiring and firing and employment trends in government. Our guests this morning are Michael Kane, the CHCO at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at the Defense Department.
I'm going to give each of our guests about 60 seconds for this next question, and that is advice for other CHCOs out there and others who are dealing with these hiring and firing trends. We want to start with Mr. Kane at Energy, and what are some of the bottom line pieces of advice you would share with your colleagues?
Face the fact that budgets are going to get tight and start thinking in front of yourself. And that means don't cut training, don't cut experience-related travel, and focus on how you can maximize alternatives to the traditional ways of doing business, like recruitment. Start looking at alumni events. Start looking at putting students on stipends instead of sending recruitment officials repeated travel. So focus on investing in training. It's where our strength is.
Mr. Tamburino.
Plan, and do some more planning. You have to get ahead of the vacancies. You have to get ahead of the training curve. And after you're done planning, tell your people what you're doing. Solicit their feedback. The best people to give you advice are the people actually doing the work. They know what's required. They know where the excesses are. They know where the gaps are. Go solicit their advice. Listen to them. Engage in conversation every day.
And that brings our discussion to a close. We'd like to thank our guest, Michael Kane, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Energy Department, and Pat Tamburino, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Civilian Personnel Policy at DOD. It's been great having you. And you've been listening to a Federal News Radio discussion about hiring and firing trends in government. If you missed any part of this discussion, check our website later this morning, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.